Good evening. So nice to be back. I've been thinking a great deal about Eiken Roshi, of course, and all the Zen teachers are talking with each other on the internet about him and about ceremonies and services and remembrances. And I think when we chant the Heart Sutra like that, it's a great celebration as well as an expression of passing if not sorrow, at least the poignance of how things come and how they go. In our chanting of the Heart Sutra, we say no old age and death, and also no extinction of them in our translation. But the real way that it's said is, and I keep thinking we should change this, is no old age and death, and also no extinction of it. That old age and death and life and death are all one of one piece. You can't have one without the other. It's like war and peace. One actually defines the other one. Death is the absence of life, and life is the absence of death. Interesting. So let's do introductions around.
Samuel.
Chris.
And
Angie.
Wolfgang is here from the Wednesday night group. It's wonderful to see you. So we're in the middle of talking about time, which I talked about on Wednesday night also. So it just goes on and on, really. We have 10 sets of paragraphs, at least the way I've set it up. And we're on number 6. And if anybody needs a copy, I have them here. Sally, did you get a copy? You're welcome. Wolfgang, of course. I think that's intact. So I will read number 6. However, your attempts, although the view of an ordinary person and the causes and conditions of those views are what the ordinary person sees, they are not necessarily the ordinary person's truth. The truth merely manifests itself for the time being as an ordinary person. Because you think your time or your being is not truth, you believe that the 16-foot golden body is not you. However, your attempts to escape from being the 16-foot golden body are nothing but bits and pieces of the time being. Those who have not yet confirmed this should look into it deeply. The hours of horse and sheep, which are arrayed in the world now, are actualized by ascendings and descendings of the time being at each moment. The rat is time, the tiger is time, sentient beings are time, Buddhas are time. Horse and sheep and rats and tigers are all ways of, in old Japan, of measuring time. So the horse, hour of the horse is 11 in the morning till 1 in the afternoon. think of that the next tomorrow and think, oh, I'm in the hour of the horse. And the hour of sheep is 1 to 3 in the afternoon. And rat and tiger are one of the 12 ways of identifying months. I actually was born in the year of the rat, which is a curious animal, but the rat was the first one to tell all the other animals that Buddha had died. So the rat is considered to be very special and important. At the time you enlighten the entire world with three heads and eight arms, meaning one of the great big statues of enlightenment, you enlighten the entire world with the 16-foot golden body. To fully actualize the entire world with the entire world is called thorough practice. So it's not anywhere else. You actualize the entire world with the entire world. That's our practice. It's what we do. To fully actualize the golden body, to arouse the way-seeking mind, practice, attain enlightenment, and enter nirvana is nothing but being, nothing but time. Just actualize all time as all being. There is nothing extra. A so-called extra being is thoroughly an extra being. Thus, the time being half actualized is half of the time being completely actualized, and a moment that seems to be missed is also completely being. In the same way, even the moment before or after the moment that appears to be missed is also the time being complete in itself. Vigorously abiding in each moment is the time being. Do not mistakenly confuse it as non-being. Do not forcefully assert it as being. In other words, don't think. Don't try to figure it out. You can't say, oh, it's a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and you think you've missed it, or maybe it's coming up next, or what shall I do? And all the time, you're right in the middle of it. This is it. You may suppose that time is only passing away and not understand that time never arrives. Although understanding itself is time, understanding does not depend on its own arrival. And I would say understanding just happens. People only see times coming and going and do not thoroughly understand that the time being abides in each moment. This being so, when can they penetrate the barrier? Even if people recognize the time being in each moment, who could give expression to this recognition? Even if they could give expression to this recognition for a long time, who could stop looking for the realization of the original face? According to an ordinary person's view of the time being, even enlightenment and nirvana as the time being would be merely aspects of coming and going, just more cheap ideas, part of our longing for a future condition, a future place to be. This is one of the more clear passages, I think, even though it sounds a little wild. It's actually pretty clear. And it's about the necessity of doing and being what we're doing and being, rather than trying to get somewhere else where we can do and be better, or more, or less, or not be seen, or be seen, or something, that we're constantly trying to cook up ways to be in time that are different from the time that we're in. It's curious, isn't it? It's a little uncomfortable often to be in the time we're in. Self-consciousness can be extremely uncomfortable, especially if we don't realize that we ourselves are the golden, many-armed Buddha. That's what the first paragraph is. The views of an ordinary person and the causes and conditions of those views are what the ordinary person sees, but they're not necessarily the ordinary person's truth. So the ordinary person is manifest as an ordinary person, even though that person isn't ordinary at all. There's no such thing as an ordinary person. There's only the belief that one is ordinary. And we often regret it. Oh dear, I wish I could be better. I wish I could be a better person. I wish it wasn't like this. I wish my life wasn't like this. And all the time, what we are is the gift. In the Lotus Sutra, they say it's what we are is sewn into the hem of our coat, so that unless we know it's there, we go around thinking that we're poor. But actually, we have everything that we need. But he says, even trying to get away from being a 16-foot Buddha, which he says we don't really want to be. It's not that it's something that we aim for. What we aim for is something in the future, something better. But the 16-foot Buddha is right here, right now. So even if we're trying to get away from that, run away from that, even that is being time. Even that is being Buddha. Or halfway ordinary being, or all mixed up ordinary Buddha being, or something like that. It doesn't really matter what we call it. It only matters how we live it. So actualizing the entire world with the entire world is saying that we have permission to do what we're doing. That our work, our play, our life, and our death are the actualization, the reality of the world, the life of the world is our life. There isn't any other one. And it's our turn now, which I always think is kind of strange. You know, we all get a turn, and it's our turn now. We get to play this and do this, work this. Just actualize all time as all being. There is nothing extra. And then he goes into that little whiff about extra being is thoroughly an extra being. factualized is half of the time being completely actualized. So whatever you have to say about it, it is what it is. It is just as it is. This paragraph, you may suppose that time is only passing away and not understand that time never arrives. And that people only see the coming and going. If we really think about the moment, we realize that we can't really think about the moment because it's gone. If you try to pin down your present, you can't do it. It's already, you're in another one, but you can't catch that one either because you can't get it. We talked about that a little bit on Wednesday night a couple of weeks ago. Somebody said, I thought and thought about that. Can you really sit in the middle of the moment? But you can't. You can't do it. All you can do is give yourself away into the moment and not think about it. And as he says, even if you could figure it all out and be there, how could you even say it? There's no way to even express it. And even if you could express it, how could you be satisfied unless you got all the way back to the very beginning? But where's the beginning? So, I brought a couple of things more that Dogen said in another writing about this, just because I like it so much, and I thought maybe you all would like it too. Pass it around both ways. It's from a writing called Gyoji, which I hope all of you have a chance to read sometime. It's a long one, full of stories about the old teachers. The great way of the Buddhas and ancestors consists always in these supreme activities, never interrupted in their continuation, the desire for enlightenment, practice enlightenment, nirvana. It's just what he said before. These four activities never allow even a single interval between them. This is perpetuation of the way through activity. Consequently, supreme activity is neither a contrivance of the self nor that of others. It is activity undefiled. The power of such activity sustains myself and others. Its import is such that all the heavens and the entire earth of the 10 directions enjoy the merit of my activity. Even if neither self nor others are aware of it, such is the case. This is especially about the activity of practice and how it permeates our life. The sun, the moon, and the stars exist by virtue of such creative activities. The earth and the empty sky exist because of activities. Our body, mind, and its environment are dependent on activities. So are the four elements and five skandhas. Although activity is not what worldly people are likely to care for, it is every human's only true refuge. It should be examined and understood thoroughly that dependent origination, what Thich Nhat Hanh calls interbeing, everything belonging to everything, is activity. Because activity does not originate dependently, there is no beginning. There's no prime mover, as they say in philosophy. The now of activity is not the self's primordial being, eternal and immutable, not some kind of soul thing, nor is it something that enters and leaves the self, like some kind of essence. The way, called now, does not precede activity. As activity is realized, it is called now. So maybe we have time. My watch has broken, so
10 to 8.
So maybe you have some comments and questions and some elucidation. Words. Ron?
I said somewhere in this article that time does not arrive. So I'm wondering, I would say maybe another way. You know, we have that phrase, since beginning this time, what wonderful cliche that appears in so many books. But he's saying time is beginning this, and it's evidently arrives. It becomes so abstract that it doesn't have a beginning, it doesn't have an end. It doesn't have a,
Well, it feels like a long line to us. We live it as a linear thing, and in a sense that's true. That's how we know the year or the hour of the horse from the hour of the sheep. And it's important to know those things. He's not throwing all of that away. But he's saying that's just one way of experiencing time. And the other side of it, the bigger side, you could say, or the prajna side of it, is bigger than that. It includes beginningless beginning and endless end. All of that is incorporated in this being time of the right now that we are. And the right now that we are keeps appearing and disappearing in a very dynamic way. And there's nothing fixed. Nothing is solid and fixed, which is what we always say about our practice. But in terms of this, the time isn't fixed either. Yeah. Which means being itself isn't fixed. It's constantly affected by every other being. all the causes and conditions that come together to create every single moment. And it's why there's so much change and why we can't possibly know what's going to happen next, even though we try. Because there's so many things involved, from the very edges of the universe all the way to here and now. It's all included and all a part of it. It's all activity working together to make what we call life, or life and death. Life and death. Coming and going. I spent much of the week before last at the bed of one of my first students, who at the age of 82 was passing away. And it was a very beautiful experience. She was long in practice, talking about, you know, this kind of practice. She had been doing it most of her life. And she just gave it up without a fuss. It took a few days to realize what was exactly happening. You never know whether this is it or not. And then when it became obvious that it was it, then she slipped into that state of mind without fighting it. And we just walked beside her, metaphorically speaking, as she slowly sort of wound down. And then at a certain point, I chanted the Heart Sutra to her and then said, "You know, you're free." And then I left. And 10 minutes later, she was gone. It was an amazing experience. Very, very touching. And not sad, exactly. She was old. She'd been housebound for 3 years. She'd amused herself. She knew 5 languages. She had a library twice as big as that one. Oh, 3 times as big as that in her little apartment. And has read immensely. So she amused herself by reading and then talking about what she read. Very intelligent, very fun to talk to, very interested in politics, and very grumpy about it. So it all just sort of came together in one place at one time. And the Heart Sutra was a celebration as well as a farewell. That's the most mysterious part of this being time. Her being right there, right then, right now, and then there's absolutely nothing, as Dogen says over and over again, firewood isn't ash. A live person is not a dead person. They're not the same. The live person is her own time, and the dead person is its own time. Different story.